I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that the eyes of the world will be fixed on the United States over the next few days, as we will find out, and it might take some time if the truth be told, we will find out who the next president of the United States will be. Will it be Donald Trump or will it be Kamala Harris? Sean Hillen's a writer, journalist, a US citizen, and has spoken to us a number of times on the programme as well. Voting has begun, I suppose, in the more traditional sense that we're familiar with today, Sean, but record numbers of ballots have already been cast. I think it's 39%, close on 90 million people have already voted with postal votes and early voting. Really quite a remarkable record turnout, and yet to be determined who that might benefit.
Well, Greg, before we begin our conversation, it'll be convivial and interesting. I have a favour to ask. Your soothing voice has seduced me, so I've been listening to you for a long time. And yesterday, Greg, you were interviewing a football coach, and the football coach happened to ask if you would kindly be the spiritual guide for his football team. So, with all due modesty, I beg of you, would you perhaps think seriously about being the spiritual guide for the Democrats, for Kamala and Tim?
I don't think
so. Because if you agree, Greg, it is a guaranteed win.
I don't think she needs my help, Sean. I'm not. But actually, that being said, she may well, but I don't think it would have any material impact. But what do you think the impact of the early voting, the record early voting, might have, Sean?
Well, first of all, let's set up the scenario. This event, let's call it, is a wee bit more important than a Pat Gallagher Goats Don't Shave or a Daniel O'Donnell concert. It's a knife edge. It's eagerly anticipated. It's the frantic last days. It's the world holding its breath. And it's history making, because we, regardless of who wins, we will have the first woman president. We can have the first Black Latino woman president, or we can have a convicted criminal. Anything can happen. And according to the polls, and I say this with emphasis because I'm going to come back to this point, Greg. According to the polls, it's a dead heat. It's a coin flip. Now,
but there are the problem is it's reading the polls. You see, there are some that believe it actually could end up being quite wide one way or other, because it's very hard to read. It's different, say, in Britain, where they have the exit polls, right? They've got this sort of massive group of people asking people as they walk out, which way did you vote? And we're at the point now in Britain, for an example, where they can call the election pretty much as soon as polls close. The problem is with the American elections and the way it's done, and even sort of the different interpretations of the Ohio vote, for an example, even though an awful lot of weight is being put on that. No one knows, Sean.
Greg, I'm going to say something, and I'm glad you are seated, because my prediction, Kamala will win the popular vote, she will win the White House, and she will win the electoral votes, because that's the system the United States elects its president on, by a wide margin. Now, I'm not a betting man. In fact, I kind of think that bookies can be the scourge of society, because people sometimes become addicted. But my money would be on Kamala to win in a landslide. Why, Greg? Because you brought up a point there. The polls prediction, number one, the poll predictions are between 5% and 7% out. And in most of the states in America, the difference between the two guys is 1% to 3%. But more importantly, Greg, my sources in Washington tell me something quite interesting. And that is that the pollsters normally would call Greg and Sean up on their mobile phones and get your vote or your view on what you're going to vote. But people are very reluctant to answer their mobile phones if it's an unknown caller. So guess what? The pollsters can't get through to people. So what are they doing, Greg? This is what they're doing. They're basing their trends and their predictions on the results 4 years ago, which is wrong.
Yeah, I think
so
I think
of the polls.
Yeah, I think you may be right, but for different reasons, because I think often in any election, and we'll see it here in the general election, it's those most motivated to vote that will actually decide things. The people that sit at home or don't vote, they've no say in it at all. They'll not influence it one way or other. And I just feel that in terms of abortion rights for women, I think that is going to bring, it's a very emotive subject, and I think that's going to bring a lot of women out. And I don't think they'll be reflected in polls either, because I can expect people, women in Trump-supporting households, to even go in and vote for Kamala when their husband and family are voting for Trump, even without letting them know. I think it's going to be that kind of an election, and I think an issue like that, that for me is the uncertainty. But I believe that she's going to benefit greatly by people who feel very passionate voting.
Well, first and foremost, Greg, it's very important that there's a high turnout, and there has been one, as you mentioned. I think there are over 80 million people have already voted. Right, that is half of the total votes from 4 years ago. So the winner needs 270 plus electoral college votes to win the election. There are 538 total electoral votes. Harris, Kamala is out winning women big time. And the women voters are 10% higher already than male voters. Mm-hmm. So she has captured that audience. And of course, when Trump's idiotic comedian hammered Puerto Rico as a garbage collecting island, that just didn't affect the couple of million Puerto Ricans that live in the United States and vote, but also other ethnic groups.
Yes, but whilst that comedian, in inverted commas, said that at a Trump rally, the next day, And in fairness, it was a horrible thing to say, but it was said about the people of Puerto Rico. The next day, Joe Biden on a Zoom call labeled all Trump supporters as garbage.
But yes, and I'm not.
You were never going to mention that, Sean. This is the problem with U.S. politics.
I might have mentioned it in a whisper that your listeners couldn't have heard, but I might have mentioned that. Yes, Joe, as we both know, Joe can have what's called perhaps a slip of the changa, a slip of the tongue. And that's why they're keeping Joe in mothballs. But the guy, 50 years and more of public service, well into his 80s, for goodness sake, give him a break. He's done so much great work in the United States.
You say that the election is based on jobs. People want more money at the end of the working week, and immigration is important to voters. I think those are two points that you made to either Caroline or Shannon, or maybe it was Donna Marie. The only person I hear talking about those two things in any meaningful, passionate, I'm going to do something about it way is Donald Trump. He's talking about immigration. He's talking about getting serious about immigration. Whether people like the language or rhetoric, he's talking about rounding illegals up and sending them packing. He's talking about stopping criminals, convicted criminals, coming into the United States. He's talking about driving inflation down, which is how more money is put in people's pockets. That's a very simple, easy to understand message that will resonate with a lot of people, Sean, too, though. So you've highlighted two important points, and I would argue from an outsider looking on, it's Trump that's stronger on those two issues.
Well, I don't think he is stronger. Even if you consider, for example, Greg, Donald Trump's, let's call it personal professional record. Yeah, he's a field business person. He's a field business person, and he's a convicted criminal, and he avoids taxes, not to mention how
The one thing I'll say is that we've got to the point now in American politics where actually that doesn't matter, if you know what I mean. It should matter, but it doesn't matter.
You're absolutely right, Greg, and actually applies to Ireland. For example, when the government of Ireland started hammering Sinn Féin on the so-called scandals, they thought arrogantly, because in the elections in November, you will find Sinn Féin will be in the next government. People don't care about such matters. You're right. They talk about and are concerned about what money is in their pocket and do they have a job. And in terms of inflation and in terms of jobs created, actually, United States is doing very well economically. But it's interesting how reality hasn't sunk into people yet.
Okay, well, let me talk about that, Sean. During Trump's administration, fuel prices were really low. Inflation was really low. Kamala Harris is the same cheek of the same bum, if I could put it like that, as Joe Biden. If the Democrats were able to fix the problems, they've had 5 years to fix it. We can't pretend that Kamala Harris is not the Democrats and their policies and is not has not been the vice president for the 4 or 5 years. If she was going to fix stuff, that administration could have fixed it. And that's a hard argument, I think, to argue against.
Well, first of all, Donald Trump was lucky to have succeeded a Democrat president. So he succeeded a good playing field. That makes a huge difference. And also, Greg, this man, Donald, he wants to introduce tariffs. He thinks tariffs are going to take over from taxes. Now, that is going to create an isolationist United States, both economically and politically, and it is not going to help United States economy.
We have tariffs on, say, for instance, Chinese electric vehicles. The EU has huge tariffs on them because they don't want the Chinese electric vehicles being sold at Europe and destroying the market here, to the point where the biggest manufacturer of Chinese vehicles is now looking to start manufacturing these vehicles actually within Europe. Tariffs is not a new phenomenon, is it, Sean? Is that not how you protect jobs within your own country?
Well, it's not a new phenomenon. You're absolutely correct. But the amount and level of increase in tariffs that Donald Trump is promoting is huge. And keep in mind, Greg, that tariffs bring in very little amount into the national pocket. It's a very small percentage of taxes, whether that be taxes on the wealthy, whether that be corporation taxes, or whether that be taxes ordinary Joe Blows like you and me. So the tariffs cannot and will not take over from ordinary taxes. So it's a misleading, unthinking statement by Donald Trump.
Yeah, I get you. But let's talk about under the current administration as well, spending has gone through the roof. America now is no longer the superpower. What Russia is doing in assembling its opposition, sort of a change of a new world order. The debt is such in the United States at the moment that that's very likely. The dollar may not be the principal currency in this world in the not too distant future. You have to surely attribute some of that to the Democrats, if not all of it, because as you quite rightly said, you know, Trump took power for four years in between two Democratic presidents. Over that period of time, they have built up an incredible, unimaginable amount of national debt and are doing nothing to service that. Why would you continue that? Why would you not say, right, Trump, go in and see what you can do?
Greg, did I just hear you compare the United States of America to Russia? Did you say something about Russia assembling what?
The new world order, a change of the power. Who holds the power in this country, in this world? There are a number of countries at the moment that are saying, right, the base currency in this world, it's no longer the dollar. The dollar's too weak. America's borrowing too much. We need a different. We need a different principal currency that if that happens, it's devastating for America. So I'm not comparing them. I'm talking about the struggle for power in this world under the Democrats. It's shifting away from America.
Let's talk about the New World Order. Yes, the New World Order. Now, I would say 99.9% of your listeners don't want Russia as a prominent player in the New World Order. And it won't be, and it isn't. Let me just explain. Russia, no doubt, tried to woo China, the massive population and power of China, to send its troops to Ukraine. Now, that's not in the public domain, but it's absolutely true. Of course it is. And China said, no, thank you. We'll stay out of this one. So instead, Putin had to go to North Korea. Yeah, North Korea is not, in the scheme of things, a very important power. So China is not, in this new world order that you mentioned, China is not on the side of Russia. Because its best customer actually is the United States of America.
Yeah.
So the New World Order still remains the United States. We look to the United States, the land, even though it's a cliche, the land of freedom. I myself am an immigrant. I was born in Ballymurphy, grew up in Amherstown, lived in London, went to the United States as an immigrant and worked at the United Nations and then in television and newspapers before returning to Europe, to Romania, as a volunteer to set up the Human Rights League's journalism school. So I know as an immigrant firsthand the welcome I received in the United States and the opportunities that I received there. So I've admitted, for all its warts, it's still a leader of democracy worldwide, and that is not going to shift. And when Kamala wins, then it's going to be even stronger player in the world economy and in the world political sphere.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a fascinating few months. It's been a fascinating last month. And really, whomever gets in, it's going to be very interesting to how things play out on the world stage. I'm not sure what your views are on what's happening in the Middle East, but of course, Kamala Harris is a big supporter of Israel, and we know what Israel are doing to the Palestinian people and have now decided to do to the Lebanese people. Does that give you pause?
It's going to hurt Kamala and Tim in Michigan, Greg, where there are a number of Muslims living and don't like what you have just described. As you know, Greg, it's a very, very complicated situation because Hamas, on a public relations level, Hamas has done extremely well after the attack in October and what has happened since then. At the same time, Israel has gone way beyond, we all know, we all agree, way beyond breaking human rights. Awful tragedy, awful situation. Personally, Greg, and I wanted to speak about this at a national convention recently. If you take what the Palestinians want is from the river to the sea, from the sea to the Jordan River. Now, if you look at a map, yes, you have vertically you have Palestine. Now, if you imagine instead of vertically, move that horizontally. The same amount of land, just move it from vertical to horizontal, from the sea to the River Jordan, and you have a new country that's called Palestine. Why should Israel be okay with that? Well,
why should Palestine be okay with that?
Because they would have the same land, they would have an opening to the sea of about 10 to 20 miles for exports of their goods, and they would go to the River Jordan. Now, why Israel should accept that, Greg, is because Israel would have almost a complete border around Palestine to ease any of their concerns.
But Sean, with respect, I understand geographically that would make sense. But that's like saying, you know, for those who want an island, a united Ireland, why not move to the south of France and establish an Ireland over there? That's not how it works, though.
Well, actually, it's more like the Northern Ireland I grew up in. I mean, I was arrested. I was interrogated. I underwent what teenagers in West Belfast underwent back then. But, Greg, it's more like Northern Ireland than the peace process. In other words, the peace process worked because we talked politics. And, very importantly, we talked economics. And I can't remember how much, but let's say 2 billion to 3 billion pounds, punts, euro, call it what you will, went into Northern Ireland to create the wonderful place that it is today. I think if you move a vertical Palestine to a horizontal one, give them the sea and the river, Israel has the security of being around that new country, and you give 2 to 3 billion or more money, then you have peace, long-term peace in the Middle East.
So you are, thank you for that, you are as convinced as can be that Kamala Harris is going to win. You believe she'll win wide. I kind of predicted the same myself last week for different reasons because I look at things a little bit differently. A caller says, I predict that Trump will win by landslide and I'll be back to prove my point, okay? Another, Trump left America in $8 trillion of debt, which the Democrats have been trying to fix, some would say unsuccessfully, and on it goes. The one thing is, Sean, It's in everyone's interest to see what happens because it is going to have an impact. It's going to have an impact within the United States. Even if Kamala Harris wins wide, the truth is, and this is from Donald Trump's playbook, he's already sowing the seeds for it being a rigged election. So one way or other, if Kamala Harris wins, things are going to get bumpy. Let's put it like that. Things are going to get bumpy over there politically.
It's true, Greg, but you know what's been interesting over the last couple of weeks? That one, Trump is becoming ever more erratic with his personal attacks, particularly on women. But secondly, more importantly, there have been emptier seats at his rallies. I mean, if you notice some of the video, there are emptier seats at his rallies and less gusto, less passion towards him. And I think this will not be a close race. Why? because we want it to be more than that. It has to be a landslide for Kamala. With a landslide, it's very hard to say the election was stolen. I know, of course, in the, expect about 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. in the morning our time for Trump to say they've stolen the election, because he knows by then it's he's lost it. And he's going to try to stop the West Coast from doing what it is going to do.
Okay.
So truly, I think the guy has lost. And if you just add up the 81 million votes that have already come in, you've got your winner. I think, Greg, actually, the first two states that may be called, around two, I think, is Indiana and Kentucky, I think. Now, they are historically red. And even if the Democrats don't win them, which they have never done, I don't think, in the history of the United States, if they come in any way close to Trump, you may go to bed, Greg, because the game is over.
Yep.
Kamala has won it. But okay. Remember what I said, Greg. We need you as a spiritual guide.
No, I shall stay on the fence where I like the splinters. Sean, thank you so much. Lovely talking to you. Sean Hillen there, writer, journalist, and US citizen. Not everyone agreeing with him. And listen, I want to hear from people who are red, who are blue, those who support Trump, those who support Kamala. I want to hear why as well. You know, you're all very intelligent people out there and you have your views. So feel free to share them with us. 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000. I'll be back with some of the comments you've been sending in during that chat with Sean after these. Now, I referenced this on the show yesterday, and then we got an opportunity to speak to the lady in question. So I jumped at it because I can say good morning now to Assumpta. Hi, Assumpta.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Doing fantastic and great to be able to talk to you, and glad that you're doing well as well. And this is a conversation, I think, really, from my perspective, anyway, Assumpta, is to celebrate the often unsung heroes of our emergency services. And I think particularly those that do it voluntarily, they get no funding for it at all. So I suppose the story,
sure.
We could go back to Errigal on the 10th of September.
We can indeed, yeah. It's actually 8 weeks ago today, which is really, really strange. But we sort of left home in good time because we wanted to be down to Errigal good and early to get our climb done. So we sort of left the car park about 9 and worked our way up the mountain. I was taking my time because I'm not terribly fit. So we got up around 10:30. We reached the peak at about 10:30. Beautiful morning. Beautiful scenery. It was just really, really lovely. We're all delighted with ourselves. I was along with my husband and my daughter. So then we sort of had taken our pictures and all that. And then on the way down, we really sort of had got down the mountain about walking for about maybe 15 or 20 minutes. And then I got my right foot stuck between two rocks and I couldn't sort of move it. And then when I went to move it, I sort of twisted my body and sort of fell back onto the rocks and stuff. Oh. Now, luckily enough, Greg, I didn't hit my head or hit my back a wee bit, but not too bad. But my foot was lodged between these two rocks, so I couldn't get out for a few minutes. My husband and my daughter then managed to get it out or whatever. So I thought, now, you know, I'll just sit at the ground, all this kind of, you know, as we do. But I knew after a few minutes now that there was something not good or whatever. Mm-hmm. So sat on for another wee while anyway, and did try to make an attempt to walk, but just no, my feet just were just in absolute agony at this stage. So we decided to sit down again, and my daughter then says, look, we're going to have to ring Mountain Rescue. And I says, no way, I'm not ringing them out. I probably have just a spray in or whatever. So after a while, anyway, we realised then that the pain, as I say, was just getting absolutely unbearable. And my daughter just says, no, we're ringing Mountain Rescue. So she rang Mountain Rescue, and then they contacted then the Coast Guard directly themselves, because I don't think they had a chopper to come out or whatever. So, the Coast Guard then were amazing. They just sort of kept in contact all the time with my daughter and husband over the phone. And then they were able to pinpoint using some kind of a link on her phone. So they were able to pinpoint exactly where on the mountain we were. So then they said they would get a chopper out as soon as they could or whatever.
I wonder in these scenarios sometimes, because I know I think I'd be the same as you. You'd kind of, you can't bloody ring them. You know, do people be walking past you up and down the mountain while you're sitting there?
There was actually a lot of people.
Yeah, because obviously it's busy. It's early in the morning, right?
Yeah, it was busy right now. There was a big school group from down the country as well. They were up and down. And some people, to be fair, did stop and asked, were we okay and whatever. And then this guy, Seamus, I can't remember where he was from, but I'm sure if he's listening, he'll know who I'm talking about. He was going up the mountain himself, so he had stopped and sort of had taken out one of these like a thermal blanket type thing. Mm. So that sort of had kept me warm in the meantime or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, there were a lot of people up and down the mountain. Okay. As I say, some people maybe walked up, maybe were unaware.
Yeah, thought you were just taking a breather.
Going on, yeah. But yeah.
I'd be sitting there pretending I was just looking at the views, I think.
That's what I was trying to do.
And I'd have my hood up over my head. It shouldn't be like that.
Oh, I had the hood and glasses and all on. Yeah.
Right, okay. So you're back and forward with the Coast Guard. They've pinpointed your position.
Yeah.
What happens next then or something in these situations?
Yeah, so the guys then from Mountain Rescue obviously had to walk up from the car park. So because we were up the mountain, a right bit at this stage. It obviously took time for them to get the length as well. So there was a lot of personnel involved. I can't really remember because at this stage I was sort of, I think I was possibly going in and out of consciousness or whatever.
Shock as well.
But the shock. And then the weather then turned really, really quick. So it began to get really, really windy and very, very cold.
Right, okay.
So that then by the time the Coast Guard chopper arrived, it had gotten so windy, they actually were not able to land. Yeah. So what happened then was they had a paramedic then was lowered down to where I was and he administered more first aid and gave me great pain relief. And eventually then they were able to walk me down the mountain on a stretcher type thing and then onto the stretcher then the paramedic had taken down with them from the chopper.
And when they're coming down the mountain with you, is it one at each end or something? Because I mean that in itself,
I think it was about six or maybe eight altogether. Yeah.
And they walk
because
you down
because it would have been tricky for them too.
Yeah, the descent isn't it, because there's loose stone and gravel and what have you, and you have to
watch
your step. It's just an insight. I never really thought about the physically taking someone down the mountain, but they have to keep you comfortable.
And I'd be the same. And I suppose it's only when you're the other side of things and you see this, even though, as I say, I was quite unaware at the time, but obviously my husband and daughter were able to give me a full account of it all after. But it was dangerous enough for them trying to take someone down as well, you know.
So they got you down, but then what happens next to Sumter?
Yeah, so then, as I say, they eventually then, once we got down sort of to a safer place, then I was transferred onto the stretcher from the chopper from Rescue 118. And that was led by a lovely man called Colin. So he was really, really good. The whole group were really amazing, I have to say. So then they winched me up then into the chopper and then I was taken on to Letterkenny. So I only heard after that the helipad at the hospital wasn't able to allow the chopper to land there.
So we
had to go outside of Letterkenny.
There was problems with lights at that time, but that's all been resolved now. Yeah, so you had to be transported by ambulance from that landing site to the hospital.
Yeah, and then into A&E. And as I say, the staff in there were amazing too. So the staff then that came out in the ambulance was Laura and Enda, and they were amazing too. And they were so, so good. And they were just amazing, so reassuring. Mm. Because when you're in a situation like that, you're sort of coming in and out of being aware and not being aware. So just even having that friendly face and someone reassuring you and telling you you'll be okay, it does make a terrible big difference. It's amazing. Yeah.
All right. So thankfully, it was nothing that was going to take your life. That being said, you had to be gotten off the mountain.
No.
Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
You are very happy with the care that you got from Mountain Rescue.
Oh, 100%.
Michael and his blanket as well. The 118 crew and Lauren Ender at the hospital.
Yeah. Absolutely amazing. I cannot thank them enough. And I know while my injuries were not life-threatening, I know I never would have got down the mountain without the services.
Yeah.
And then to get the support and the help I needed then when I got to the hospital, they were all just amazing. Yeah. And it's like you said earlier, Greg, you know, we are inclined at times to take all these groups for granted till you need them. And then when you need them, then you really realise how amazing they are.
Oh, it's amazing. And also, obviously, you were obviously injured in and out of consciousness. It's distressing too for those that are with you because they're worried about you and they can't, they don't know why you're going in and out of consciousness. They're just afraid for the wife or mother.
So
it's tough on them as well.
Yeah.
You're back on your feet yet?
I am. I'm just hoping now to get my, I was in full plaster for just over 5 weeks then, wow. In a boot now for almost three.
So was it a break or something?
Yeah, I broke my ankle and then I did damage then to my knee as well. Yeah.
Yeah, with the weight of falling back with the leg trapped, I can only imagine.
Yeah, and then I think because I twisted, twisted a wee bit and stuff. But as I say, it could have been so, so much worse. And I'm truly grateful that that's all it was. And really from now on, it'll just be, you know, getting back gradually into walking physio. And getting some physio and that just to get me back up and running again.
Are your mountain climbing days behind you or?
Well, for the meantime.
Never say never. Okay. Listen, but the whole point of the call is A, to thank God you're safe at Sumter, but also to recognise Donegal Mountain Rescue. And the reason I want to keep emphasising that, Donegal Mountain Rescue, they when they finish with you, they have to go home and pack all the gear away, sort out the ropes, wash the gear if it's dirty or whatever you, then head home to their families and they could get a call again an hour later. They're primarily funded by people's generosity and they do fantastic work.
Correct.
We fought hard to keep the Coast Guard in Malinhead and they do work their work there as well. Obviously, Rescue 118 is a great facility. And of course, then down to the hardworking staff at Letterkenny University Hospital, who never know who's going to be rolled up or what attention they might need. Mm-hmm. And they do great work as well. And all in all, Assumpt, you'll be back up and running, as you said yourself, very, very shortly. Hopefully, if the back broke of the broken ankle. All right, thanks for helping us get that story out. Really appreciate it.
Not at all. Not
all right,
Assumpt,
lovely to chat to you. Lovely to chat to you.
And
best
you
wishes to everyone.
Take care.
Bye-bye. A little bit of potentially exclusive political news. We're heading towards a general election. Well, it's not, it's speculation, right? But I have sources. I normally trust my sources. And it looks like Sinn Féin are going to add a third candidate to contest the general election in Donegal. As you would know, they've got Páraic McLoughlin in Inishowen. They've got Piers Doherty in West Donegal. But there's a big gaping cavern, you could argue, down the east side of the county and into the south of the county. So my understanding is that in the next couple of days, you could well hear Sinn Féin confirm a third candidate. Now, you could speculate as to who that candidate might be. There are a couple of high-profile candidates in that area, but not all are in the actual Donegal constituency, are they? Some are in Sligo, Leitrim, North Donegal. So the only person, in my view, that they could actually confirm, if they were to confirm a third candidate in the coming days, would be Councillor Noel Jordan. So as I say, you know, it's only speculation and we're allowed to speculate in the show, right? But I suspect, and we'll await confirmation, I suspect that Sinn Féin are going to add Noel Jordan to the election ticket. So it'll be Noel Jordan, Piers Doherty, Páraic McLoughlin. Makes sense, I suppose, because you have Fianna Fáil now. You have Fianna Fáil now with Claudia Kennedy, of course. Micheál Nochtain, I would say, still smarting over that decision. No disrespect to Claudia Kennedy. I didn't get a chance to speak to her. I think she was on with Donal last week. You've got Pat the Coke Gallagher, a legend of Irish politics, most would agree. And you've got a sitting minister in Charlie McConnellogue in the north. For Fine Gael, of course, you have Senator Nicky Bradley and you have John McNulty. So it's going to get very interesting. It's going to be very interesting in that west-southwest. If they do ask add Noel Jordan to the ticket, as I anticipate they will, I don't want to upset anyone. I have to be careful with what I say, actually. And I will actually say one thing, too, if you don't mind. Just indulge me for a moment, because I was talking about football yesterday. And I was chatting to Brendan Devaney, and we were talking about successive teams, not successive teams, and we were referencing Downings. And probably quite clumsily, I was talking about Downings, and I've only watched two of the games. I don't have time to go out and watch football. Never pretend to be an expert. I'm literally your armchair fan. And I think I referenced something along the lines that I believed that Downings had improved greatly from when I saw them play against Dunlow last year and versus Owen Roe this year. And I think some people may have interpreted that is that I didn't give enough recognition or credit to the growth in Downing's ladies team and the previous management and those involved in getting them to where they are now. So it wasn't my intention. As I say, I was just comparing one performance I'd watched compared to another performance I watched. And I did believe that between those two games that they had made some adjustments to suit their skill set a little bit better. But anyway, as I say, it was meant with no disrespect to any previous management setup or those responsible for building the team to where they are. Anyway, that being said, don't even know why I went down that rabbit hole, but I think Sinn Féin are going to add a third candidate in Donegal. I think it's going to be Noel Jordan. So I believe, Caroline, don't look at me like that. I believe it is. That's just my view. I'm looking down. I follow politics. I'm looking down. I'm saying, well, who could it be? That's my speculation. It's not wrong. It's not going to do them any harm, for crying out loud. I got given out for before. I said, I believe Charlie McConnell's seat was safe. I've got a rap on the wrists for that. I didn't mean anything by it. It's just speculation. Isn't that what it's all about? A bit of political speculation, folks. There's no harm in it. No one seats safe, if the truth be told, until after the election. All right, Andy, sorry for holding. You were talking road safety. Imagine why. How are you keeping?
I'm all right. I'm definitely not the candidate to wear.
Well, Andy, I'm up to speculate, Andy. Maybe you could run for the Green Party.
Well, that'd be a stretch of the imagination now. Don't get started on that one.
Oh, I'm trying to get myself out of trouble, and I feel I'm getting myself into trouble. But anyway, Andy, let's talk road safety, actually. It's a serious matter. We were talking about it a little earlier on, and you've made some observations, yeah, haven't you, in relation to the, yeah, setup in Ballybuffet.
Yeah, well, look, there's in January 2023, I mean, had a wee Google while I was waiting there, and three or four high visibility crossings came up in Ballybuffet. One is at the bank corner, they call it, up, you know, on the corner of the main street, the Donegal Road and Glenfinn Street. There's one opposite the Garda station, and then there's two in Stranola. Mm-hmm. Now, nobody seems to stop at the one at the bank corner.
That's the controversial one, Andy, I think. That's the one that people are going, what's going on here? Did you try and cross or what was the story?
I did. And as many people do, you might park in an Avenue Street car park and go from that side to the other side, or you might park on the Jackson side and walk from one side to the other. I was on the Bank of Ireland side trying to cross, and look, I'm 6 foot and I'm 18 stone. It's not as if I can't be seen. You know, three cars passed me before the fourth one stopped, you know, and then obviously you walk across, but it's just disheartening.
Were you walking from the bank across the way or from... So you're looking over your right shoulder, aren't you, to see if anything's coming down that road? You're looking up to your right to see if anything's coming down the Donegal Road. You're looking to your left to see, are they pulling into the car park or are they going to stop? It's a mess, isn't it, in terms of safety? And
it is. And where the span of the works is the yellow box as well. Because, I mean, you travel that road regularly, I'm sure. Mm. And when you're coming down into Ballybuffet, you stop, I say, Pat Bone, there's a yellow box there. You know, if you stop at that yellow box, all the traffic coming from Glenfinn Street thinks you're letting them out. Mm. And then, God help anybody who's actually on that crossing, wanting to cross from the Bank of Ireland across to the other side of the street where the IB is, you know?
And did they put new signs up there? They put new signs up there that gives motorists fairer warning that there's a crossing. But obviously, your experience is post their erection. You don't believe that's obviously made a material impact in the recognition of pedestrians.
Not at all. And I mean, don't go looking at against the website. Says they're effectively zebra crossings without beacons. Mm-hmm. And now subsequently, the beacons have gone up. But it makes no difference. And it also says, you know, the vehicles do not have an automatic right of way. These things and consideration should be given to pedestrians.
Right, Andy, and let's be fair then. Along. So the infrastructure arguably is there. It's not a great place for a crossing anyway, but look, it is there, right? So at this point, do you believe, is your ire at motorists? In other words, motorists, look, you've got fair warning. It's a pedestrian crossing. We're heading into dark, wet winter nights. You need to respect pedestrians a bit more. Or do you believe that the crossing really shouldn't be there at all? What's your view, Andy, as a local using it?
I think it's going to be a mix of both. Obviously, there should be consideration from motorists, but there are restrictions. You know, there are impediments put in their way because of things like the yellow box. And look, there are also two sets of traffic lights in the town. If you take the one at McClay's Corner in Stranola and you take the one outside of McElhenney's, then, you know, if people do observe those four crossings that are now in there as well, the town is going to come to an absolute standstill.
Yeah, I get you.
It really is. Yeah. Because nobody seems to know how to use the yellow box either. You know, everybody pulls into the yellow box with no consideration for the purpose of them. And, like, honestly, if you do stop at all those crossings, the town will come to a standstill. So it's two things equally, I think.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I don't think anyone wants to be involved in a situation where someone gets injured or worse. And it comes back again to, you know, mutual respect. You did your bit. You stood there waiting for the traffic to stop. But They were reluctant to do so, and it still feels like a dangerous crossing, even if the traffic does stop, Andy.
Yeah, listen, and I mean...
Yeah, go ahead.
Know, well, it came back the other direction. So on the other side, the same thing happened, and a guy looked at me and kind of threw his eyes to the heavens. I go, so what can I do, you know? And I thought, well, you can stop. That'd be nice.
I don't know. Given your description earlier, I wouldn't be throwing my eyes at heaven at you in case you pull me out of the car.
Well, plus you can't. Hey, just because I'm fast doesn't mean I'm strong.
I know. I'm only messing. But come here. Are the Christmas lights going up in Ballybuffet yet? I didn't notice them the last time I went through.
Yes.
They are fantastic.
Yes.
Great stuff.
They will be going up because the Christmas lights.
Ho, ho, ho. Andy, all right, listen, stay safe. Thanks for helping us raise that. Appreciate you coming on and talking about it. It's great to get the text.
No problem.
But it's lovely to speak to the listener as well. Take care, Andy. Bye-bye. Thank you very much indeed. Right, loads of your comments coming in very shortly. Now, I do a lot of interviews on this programme with small business owners, and I just speak to a lot of them off-air as well. And I think I can say with confidence that there are very few businesses, very few small or medium businesses in this county, or indeed potentially across the country, who are putting prices up for the crack, that they're gouging or trying to rip customers off. There is a serious issue with the rising costs of doing businesses for small and medium businesses, particularly those with, you know, low margins. And they don't want to put the prices up, but I'd say a lot of them are looking at the menus and going, right, we didn't get what we needed necessarily in the budget, so we're going to have to stay open. We're going to have to up our prices. And Paddy from Sleeve League Tours joins me on the show now. Hi, Paddy.
How's it going, Greg? How are you doing? Paddy Byrne, Matt.
Hi, Paddy Byrne. I'm not sure.
Sleeve League
Boat
Trip.
Sleeve League Tours
are different tours. Outfit.
So give me your name of the company.
Sleeve League Boat Trips.
Sleeve League Boat Trips. Will you take me out in the summer? I'd love to.
No bother at all. Sure, you've not out to me before.
I thought you were out already. Maybe I was.
Well, you know where to find me.
Was I drunk?
There's no excuse. Open invitation on air now.
All right, Sleeve League Boat Tours for all your Sleeve League boating tours, and I'm sure Sleeve League Tours are doing great work as well. But anyway,
they're a bus company in Tielan, yeah.
Excellent. So, just in relation to my preamble there, Paddy, I think you know a sign's been put up along those lines. What have you got to say about it?
Well, just as you said yourself, like we have to put up our prices. I don't want to. I haven't changed my prices in years. That must be 8 or 9, maybe even up to 10 years since I bumped my price up. I'm charging €25 a head for adults, which is, I've been told, is not a lot, but it's enough. I mean, I can see when I had a young family, I couldn't afford to take my boat out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't want to be, as you say, gouging, but it's just coming to the stage where it's just not going to be viable to highlight that price, you know.
I mean, you've got to keep your boat compliant, right? You've got to keep it up to a certain standard. You've got to fuel it. You've got to have insurance, and you've got to make a wage as well, Paddy. You're not going
to. Well, have to make
busy
full wages. I have.
But my point is you don't want to be a busy fool either, right? So you have to.
Not
make
at all.
Money.
You have to be. You have to have something out of it. I mean, we have a very short window.
Yeah.
And you're just the weather's been better now than it was all summer.
That's right.
So I mean, we're tied up. We're up on the. Actually lifted the boats out today, finished up for the season a few weeks back, and we have a while short narrow window of opportunity. If the weather's right, we can do quite well.
Yeah,
but we're not getting the chance. So it's just I have three lads employed and myself. I have there's wages to go out. There's a lot of things coming in. Insurance has gone up every year. Fuel's gone up every year. You know, even the simple stuff like filters for maintenance, anything at all that you're buying, you can just see it constantly rising, you know. And the prices aren't moving. I haven't moved my prices in accordance. And it's going to have to happen. I hope not this year or next year, but in the next year or two, we're definitely going to have to try and catch up. But,
yeah, and I think the message is, and you know that for some it means they might not be able to afford services or trips or what have you, but I mean it's... For customers to understand that it's not a choice that you're making because you can, it's a choice you're making because you have to.
Well, that's it. And I mean, I've consciously done that. I've kept it as tight as possible over the years. As I say, we get people telling us, oh, you're not charging enough. We get other people telling us we're charging too much. And, you know, we don't want to turn anybody away. And I mean, Jesus, I would hate to think that I'm too dear for or the average family. But I mean, there's a lot of families. The average family, unfortunately, is not. They don't have the money that they used to have either. You know.
Yeah, Paddy.
The money's just not there.
Yeah, back to the summer. You know, even when the wind dropped, there was still a mighty swell on the sea. That never went down, really. As you say, it's been calm.
The summer was a complete write-off.
What's that down to? Is that down to weather that's happening far away from us? Because even
when wind was coming from
a favourable direction, there was still this massive swell in there. Well, not massive, but big
swell.
The sea didn't
settle right the whole time.
Yeah.
It was one of them summers, just, I don't know. Everybody says, next year could be better, but it's been getting gradually worse the last 5 or 6 years. I think every summer's getting progressively worse.
I think we're getting to the point
where the season is getting shorter with us.
Like, yeah, for sure.
We could take people out, surely, but no point frightening them. We want people to enjoy it. You know.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, Paddy. The boats are out of the water now. You can see what's happening underneath, and get ready for next season. We hope it's
getting ready for next year. Hopefully, we start in early April next year. And
brilliant.
The man says if the weather's not right, we'll. We're trying to get an alternative system going now. We're going to try maybe a harbour tour or something a wee bit more. Something to just get people on the water. We mightn't be fit to get to see the cliffs, but we're hoping to do something that'll keep people interested anyway, you know.
Sure, there's nothing better. If anyone hasn't done it, there's nothing, especially with a safe outfit like yours, there's nothing more peaceful and relaxing than getting out in the water. All right, Paddy, this is best of luck. Take care. We'll see
thanks
you next season.
Greg, all
God
the
bless
bit.
You. Thanks for listening. Thanks for... taking the call there. Back to our chat with Sean there a little earlier on in the US elections. That man has no clue. Trump will win, possibly save America and stop these wars in Europe that Joe Biden started, they say. That guy, Sean, talking about the US election, it's so typical. To say Joe Biden done a great job is ridiculous. Does he forget all the wars he was involved in or part of and the millions of people killed as a result? Plus Biden's unwavering support for the genocide in Israel. He is a warmonger. Now, don't forget Trump says that he'll let Israel go in and finish the job. You know what I mean? He's not saying that he's going to slap every wrist. And he'll go in and say to Ukraine, we can't keep supporting you anymore. You're going to have to give that land that Russia annexed to Russia. So that's his solution. It's not fantastic if you're Russian or if you're Ukrainian or Palestinian. But anyway, the caller says at the end of the day, it's irrelevant. And the president is the military-industrial complex. And Zionists, they believe, control everything. Well, it's been a busy show. It's been a bumper show. Lots of different stuff. Thanks so much for listening, but don't go anywhere, of course. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock with much more, of course. But for today, for this Tuesday, stay safe and stay tuned, because John Bredesen's around the Northwest now.